I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Okay, live for the Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans Studio on this Friday around the country. Rocket Mortgage with you every step of the way to provide a seamless mortgage experience. What's happening? How you doing today? Tiki and Tierney, CBS Sports Radio, CBS Sports Network, SiriusXM 206. On Twitter at Tiki and Tierney, at Tiki Barber, at Brandon Tierney. 855-212-4227. A holiday Friday?
It is.
Which means we get home like normal civilians, like most people do around
it's
the rest of the country
Friday,
tonight.
So 30 miles will take us 30 minutes as opposed to an hour and 15 minutes like it did yesterday.
Which, by the way, is not terrible.
No, you're
not. An hour 15 is kind of the norm for us.
You're right. I'm looking forward to the weekend.
Yeah, same here.
Passover and then Easter for us. We celebrate both in our household, so it'll be fun.
I can't wait. It's always fun. And last night was fun. Although I got to tell you, we're sitting at the island at the counter, and we're doing our Easter eggs last night. Jen and I are having a little bit of wine. The kids are getting ready to leave them for the Easter bunny, and I get an alert: Joel Embiid not playing. I can't tell you how much that annoyed me, because so much of my ire, really my strongest take of the show yesterday.
It was the whole show yesterday for you.
I mean, I don't mind being wrong, but can I at least get a chance to see if it's going to come to fruition?
Yeah, I hear
me
you.
Imploring the Nets to do something to Embiid for the way he took a shot at Allen?
Now it can't happen, one, because he re-apologized for his horrendous
presentation
of his initial apology.
Yeah.
And the 76ers just bludgeoned the Nets.
God, they smoked them.
And I hate to go this route, but I almost felt like they played better without Embiid. It felt faster paced. And when it's faster paced, it benefits Ben Simmons so much more. Obviously, J.J. Redick had a ridiculous day. We have 27 points or so and just was lights out. Tobias Harris was amazing as well. But I feel like Ben Simmons, when he's allowed to play with that space, you not have this big body in the middle, even though Boban was down there a lot. I love that guy.
Yeah, he is
Boban.
Huge. His ears are as big as my hands.
It's like a troll. He's
got catcher's mitts on each side of his head.
I'm telling you,
he's
awesome.
A big boy.
He fouled out pretty quickly, though. But still, it was interesting. As I'm watching the game and just seeing how the flow went compared to games one and game two, they play a little bit better without Joel Embiid. And maybe that's just because there was a heightened awareness about being in Brooklyn and not wanting to go down two games to one, being on the road. And because Joel wasn't there, there was just a heightened sense of urgency.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe that's what it was, but they played great last night, the 76ers.
They did. And, Brooklyn was popping. Place was pretty good for most of the night. Obviously, there's only so much you can try to coerce from your team when you start to see the score getting a little lopsided here. But the difference in talent was a little surprisingly it was surprisingly evident without Embiid. I mean, when they have Embiid, even though I hear you in terms of spacing and in terms of maybe freeing Simmons up a little bit to do some things in the half court, which he did, 31 points, career playoff high. You mentioned Harris, who was phenomenal. J.J. Redick was great. The Nets did not shoot the ball well from downtown at all, 21%. Joe Harris had none. They were 8 for 39 overall. But all that aside, I didn't – and listen, maybe last night was kind of an outlier, although when you factor in what went down in game two, how the Sixers scored with such ease – when Greg Monroe gets the last second start, he's been on the team for a couple of weeks. He has 9 points and 13 rebounds. Maybe you have to start saying the Sixers team is ready to roll.
Maybe he has no offensive game, Greg Monroe. He's frustrating around the rim. He can't get anything to fall. But
I remember when the Bucks signed him for like kind of big money.
I know.
And they couldn't wait to get rid of
him. Yeah, you're right. Because he's limited. He's limited
offensively. He's an old school big.
But I think I think the 76ers quieted a lot of the critics of them. And I guess this happens in the postseason. We're usually not seeing it this way because the first round in general has you know, not been that interesting over the last couple of years. And so it's a foregone conclusion. This year, especially in last night's series of games, there was still some uncertainty. Like, mm-hmm. What would the Spurs do? You know, how would the Golden State Warriors respond, which we obviously found out.
Don't you think the bigger question was, what would the Nuggets do? More so than what would the Spurs do? Don't you think that was the more direct question based on the season?
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
Yes.
Like,
but
what would the Nuggets do?
Yes, but no, because it was on the road for the Nuggets. Look, the Nuggets are a young team. We know this. And, you know, and they have some really good players and had a fantastic regular season, as you can see up there. 58 wins. 54 wins, 28 losses during the regular season, second in the West. But they're young. Mm-hmm. And so you travel, you know, against a Greg Popovich coached team in the first round of the playoffs. I mean, you could kind of expect what happened. But yes and no for me with the Denver Nuggets. It was more the Spurs. I just don't think they're as good as they have been historically.
They're not.
But they had some great performances. You know what I mean?
No question. I mean, they played well. I think what I meant more national intrigue.
Yeah. Well,
that's what I mean.
True.
Not so much. Are the Spurs competent? Are they well coached?
They're going to be, regardless.
Of course, they're
going to
show up and play well.
You
know, they're going to have the few outliers and anomalies like every team has. But, you know, Pop was a little sloppy in game two. We got the technical foul. We talked about this with 4 minutes to go in the game. It was a 2-point game. They wind up losing. And you know, obviously Murray goes bonkers with 21 points in the fourth quarter. At one point, they had 56 points, I think, in the third quarter with 6 minutes to go. We talked about this and Denver's inability to find the pace.
Yeah.
And it just doesn't seem like they're going to find the pace. They might find it for little spurts here and there, but it just doesn't seem like they're going to find their pace for anything sustained. So that series, I don't want to say it's boring. I don't want to disrespect the Spurs, but it's disappointing. While none of us thought the Nuggets would make a race to the finals necessarily, nobody on this show thought that.
No.
But there was still intrigue because, and tell me if you disagree, Teak, they're viewed in large part as an ascending team, and the Spurs are not.
Of course, because they're young.
But the Spurs are not.
It's Jokic and Jamal Murray. Yeah,
but
exactly.
The Spurs aren't. Well, and the ascending team's always more interesting.
Yes, that's true.
That's what I'm saying.
But we always seem to have this conversation about the San Antonio Spurs as we count them out every single season.
No, we do.
every year. And this year would have been the year you should have counted them out. Because it was DeMar DeRozan and LaMarcus Aldridge. And after that, like, who are you talking about? Nobody knew that Derek White was going to explode for 36 points. I mean, seriously, who knew that?
Not me.
Right? So there's nobody to nationally to get on board and say, this team has it, and this is the reason why, and this is the guy, Derek White. Nobody knows who the hell he even is. He's going to have the game. You can't do that nationally.
I hear you.
And so you count out the Spurs, but I guess what we should learn, which we never do, is you never count out Greg Popovich because he always seems to have these guys ready for when it matters.
There's no doubt. And I got a question for you. We're going to get to Durant, obviously. Next segment, pretty much all Kevin Durant. But I have a question about the way the Nets-Sixers series is unfolding now. If you're Brett Brown can't mess around because he's a couple losses away from losing his job. Unfortunately, it's well chronicled.
You think that's fair to him?
Yeah, we've talked about this. Yeah. I do. I definitely do. When you start to hear some of the stories that leak where he brought in Bruce Bowen, the Spurs culture, we talked about this.
Just resetting it after they have a convincing victory on the road against a somewhat ascending Nets team. I don't think they're ascending yet, but they're getting there. And they don't have quite enough pieces, even though Caris LeVert is ridiculously good.
So happy he's healthy.
I know. He can create shots and find points.
So can Russell.
Like nobody's business.
They're good. They need one more piece.
Exactly right.
To be legit.
But still, there was a threat that they could make this difficult for the 76ers. And Brett Brown had his team ready to go without Joel Embiid. So just to reset, Brett Brown.
I still believe, yes, I do. I'm not going to waver from that. I take no pleasure in saying that. And I am curious, you know, I almost hate doing this when they're up 2-1 and they played very well the last two games. Very curious who's going to be coaching that team. Mm. Because if you hire the right coach, you know, I don't, you try to lure Jeff Van Gundy. Do you think Mark Jackson's the guy? Whatever they do, and we'll show Brett a little more respect than to start digging the grave while he's still coaching. But yes, I do believe that they'll have a new head coach next year to answer that directly. But my question, and the reason I even bring up Brett's name here, is because maybe he doesn't have certainly the license or the freedom, but more directly the confidence. If you're part of the Sixers franchise right now, you're starting to see we're simply, no doubt about it, better than the Nets.
Yes.
Agree or disagree?
Definitely agree.
Okay. Should they begin to wrestle with the notion, and it's dangerous, hey, you know what? We're going to keep Embiid on ice for one more game. Hmm. Let's see if we can squeeze one more win without Joel Embiid.
I probably would.
It's something to consider, right?
I definitely would.
Something to consider.
It's hard to flirt with that because the last thing you want is to come back 2-2. You know what I mean?
Yes.
And so,
especially for a team that's never won anything.
Exactly right. Even though they did get deeper than I think a lot of people expected last season. It was somewhat of a surprise.
I mean.
If 100% I'm on board with you. But if Joel Embiid, and it seemingly... like this issue with his knee, which you kind of thought was just arthritis and tendonitis or something that, you know, comes from excessive use and he can just sit down but when he wants to. But when push comes to shove, he's going to play. The fact that he sat out last night.
Very, very bizarre.
It was odd.
Well, it tells me that he's really banged up, which is really problematic for
them.
Exactly. Which leads me to ask you the question.
And so
Maybe sit him down again.
If I'm the 76ers and I played as well as I did on the road against the Nets in game three, like they're talking about last night, I probably would. If you can get extended minutes from Boban and not again, he foul out in the third quarter.
I think it was not even midway. I think it was early third.
It was pretty quick. I don't love Greg Monroe simply because we were just talking about his offensive game is very limited, even though he is a force on the boards, particularly on the defensive side. But I don't know if they need him in this series because Brooklyn can't hurt you. Right?
Inside. Yeah.
Right? So
a couple of alley-oops, Allen, stuff like that. But in terms of like conventional post winning, no.
They're not going to hurt you.
No.
So if you can get away with resting Joel Embiid, I absolutely would rest Joel Embiid. Let Ben Simmons build the confidence that Ben Simmons needs to build in order to be the leader of this team because their give and go game and you know the paint movement of the ball was awesome last night.
Yeah, they were fun to watch.
I mean, you get wide open dunks like they were getting wide open dunks simply from two man games.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it was fantastic. It was cool.
Yeah,
you know what I mean.
Yeah,
you rarely see that.
Ben Simmons is incredibly gifted.
Agreed.
I mean, just imagine Ben Simmons with a jump shot. We've talked about this for a couple of years now, and you have to imagine. You know, I believe he's got a real motor, and I believe. And by the way, not every young, really talented player has a desire to be an unquenchable desire to be great. I think Ben Simmons does.
Yeah, I do too.
I think he does. So I think he's going to put in the time to get the shots up and eventually get at least something that's a passable jump shot.
And now who can help him do that? Magic Johnson.
Magic. Magic set shot from back in the day. 855-212-4227 on this holiday Friday. Tiki and Tierney. CBS Sports Radio, CBS Sports Network. So I said the other day before the playoffs started, I said, you know, guarantee there's going to be a few times, Teak, where we open up these mics, 3:02 Eastern after Axe update, and we're going to lament what's wrong with the Warriors. What happened to the Warriors? What's the state of the Warriors? Mm-hmm. Today's not one of those days.
Not at all.
Today we actually go in the opposite direction. We begin to focus. Now that we see the Warriors starting to gain velocity and gain some traction together again, can anybody hang with the Warriors? They were phenomenal last night. They answered the questions. I love it. We'll get to that coming up. Tiki and Tierney, CBS Sports Radio.
This is Tiki and Tierney on CBS Sports Radio.
All righty, CBS Sports Radio's toll-free line is 1-855-212-4227. That's how you get in touch with us here at Tiki and Tierney. Brought to you by GEICO. Great news. Quick way to save money. Switch to GEICO. Go to geico.com and in 15 minutes, save 15% or more on car insurance. All right, obviously, holiday weekend, so maybe you're in the road or on the road, I should say. Keeping up with us here on the show. Big basketball weekend, and we'll get to the games that are going on tonight. Some meaningful ones, clearly. But we're still on last night, and the message that was sent from the get-go with the Warriors who showed right away they weren't messing around. They dropped the 40 spot in the first, 41 to be exact, on the Clippers in the first quarter. Just snuffed them out. And then if there's any thoughts of a comeback or any thoughts of the energy of the building maybe elevating the Clippers to a second half run, they came out and they snuffed them in the third quarter right from the outset. And, you know, what Kevin Durant did, there are only a handful of people in all of the sports combined that can end a pretty interesting conversation by saying, you know who I am.
Yeah.
And then saying, I'm whomever I am.
Yeah.
And then go out and do what he does.
Yeah, we played that yesterday.
Who else is doing that?
Nobody.
I mean, very few people.
But he was right.
And
it was weird because it wasn't like he was being cocky. He was just like, you guys know who I am. I'm the finals MVP.
Why are we wasting time on this?
Why are we talking about this? And
I did a sports minute on him yesterday and his showdown with Patrick Beverley, and the fact that Beverley was literally just holding him and not getting called for it in game two, and he got away with it. Patrick Beverley got called for a couple of fouls for just putting his hands on Kevin Durant, which is the right call.
KD got hit with a cheap one, too.
Yeah, he did, but they got
really cheap.
The technical?
Not the technical, the actual foul.
Oh, I didn't see that one.
Weak one. Weak.
Because I was flipping back and forth.
I got you.
But it was interesting to see the KD when he's focused on getting his and being KD, because he was amazing.
He was amazing, but he still didn't deviate from the natural flow of the offense.
No, you're right.
Which makes it even more brilliant. And this is what he talked about 2 days ago when he said, you know, hey, yeah, I'm sure I could shoot 43%, shoot over these guys. I've got Beverly underneath me, you know, up in my chin. I've got this guy dropping, this guy dipping, this guy flashing. But his IQ and his self-awareness and his selflessness is high enough where he knows who he's playing with and he gets the ball to the right guy. Something he said post-game, Durant says, no, I'm going to stick with the plan.
I think a lot of people who watched the game, who analyzed the game, thought that I should be engaging in a one-on-one physical battle, whatever that is, to other people with Patrick Beverley, and you know, I don't do that type of stuff. I just play. So that's what I was trying to let people know. I've been in for 12 years, and I'm 30. I don't need to show nobody nothing at this point.
Except, of course, the Garden, when you come there in front of us and you have to win us over next year.
It doesn't feel like he's 30.
Nah, it doesn't feel like he's 30.
It doesn't feel like he's been in for 12 years. It really doesn't. I don't know. I guess it does, but it just doesn't feel like he's younger than that.
I do, too.
I don't know why.
I definitely do. I've always sensed that with Kevin. He's always felt younger than he actually is.
Yeah, but he dominated Patrick Beverley.
But think about this one. He played his first year in Seattle.
I know.
That tells you all you need to know.
That's great.
You actually realize, oh, that's right, his first year was with Seattle.
A lot of people don't even remember a Seattle team.
It's crazy. That's where he met Nick Collison, the great Oklahoma City Thunder superstar.
That's right.
He's got his number retired.
Retired jersey. Nick Collison.
The only number retired for character.
Is that right?
He doesn't play. What else are they doing?
They got to retire somebody's number.
He never plays.
I know, but they got to retire somebody's number.
Retire the Sasquatch mascot that they used to have in Seattle. What was that guy's name? Bigfoot? Remember it was like a Chewbacca.
No, the Yeti was Yetis in like the Antarctic.
I don't know what he was, but he kind of looked like Chewbacca. He looked like a hippie Chewbacca because, if Chewbacca, you know, went to Woodstock and was unkempt for years, he would look like that thing that was roaming around Key Arena all those years with the Seattle Supersonics.
I hear you.
But he's great. He's a pleasure to watch. And did you really have any doubts? Now, I didn't know that he'd hit his first five or six. You think he might miss one, whatever it equated to. But did you have any doubts he would come out and deliver?
Look, there was no doubt that Kevin Durant was going to play this way. There was no doubt that the Golden State Warriors were going to play this way and smack down the L.A. Clippers, who, you know, look, they're still a good team. Lou Williams is still a good bench player. Montrezl Harrell is still a good effort guy.
I think he's more than an effort guy. They pointed that out on the broadcast last night.
He's becoming that much more.
They showed him some necessary love.
Yeah, I agree with you.
You know what I mean?
But my point is, he's not. Lou Williams isn't scoring 35 points a night. Montrezl Harrell is not scoring 25 points a night. And they're not hanging with the better teams simply because of their bench in the postseason on a night-to-night basis and throughout a seven-game series. That just is what it is.
Yep.
So the question really is, with the Golden State Warriors, if they're going to play like this and respond to bad outings like this, the only team that can beat the Golden State Warriors is really the Golden State Warriors when it comes down to it. And look, we see it. We've heard it. You've heard this all day. They're prone to lackadaisical moments. They're prone to boredom. They get up by 31 points and lose the game. It doesn't make any sense unless you're just bored, right? You're just not taking it serious. And as Steve Kerr said after game two, we stop playing. If they decide to play four quarters every night, nobody's beating them. I think that's what this tells us. I mean, they slapped down this Clippers team at home with a Clippers team, by the way, that was feeling good. You could feel Patrick Beverley like having this mojo going into this game. Like, I got him. I'm in his head. Mm-hmm. He's mine. And then seven straight shots in for Kevin Durant, and obviously all the other ones that fell too for the Golden State Warriors. They were beaten to submission before halftime. So who can beat the Golden State Warriors? The Golden State Warriors are the only team that's going to beat them this year.
I've got somebody else that I think could beat the Golden State Warriors.
Who's that?
And it's part of the Golden State Warriors, but it's more specific. It's Draymond.
Hmm. Why?
Because the one thing we could gloss over, because you look at plus minus, you look at shooting efficiency, you look at all the pertinent stats, everybody played well. I mean, Durant was 14 for 23. Andrew Bogut played 25 minutes.
He did.
As we surmised, his, with his elevated role, and he got you 14 rebounds. He shot 4 of 5. Steph was 4 of 6 from downtown. Mm-hmm. Klay Thompson was cold early, got hot. Bunch of guys came off the bench, and, you know, McKinney played pretty well off the bench. I thought Looney was very good, very bouncy. Draymond Green, 0 for 5 from downtown.
Yeah, he was. 0 for 5. He took too many of them downtown. But the thing, but here's the beauty of Draymond is that he doesn't necessarily have to score to be effective, an effective contributor for the team. He just can't be a distraction. You know what I mean? And so, yeah.
A distraction personality-wise or just as an inefficient player?
Just as a – like, he knows his role. Like, there were points during – these last two seasons in particular, these back-to-back championship seasons for the Warriors, where you'd go into a game, you're not expecting him to score more than 2 buckets, right? But he's hustling on defense. He's diving after the ball. He's facilitating a fast break on after he gets rebounds. He's just an effective, efficient piece. It's when he becomes a distraction, when he starts, like, from 4 years ago, kicking guys in the groin and, you know, being overly demonstrative and things of that nature that force other players to worry about him, mm-hmm. that he becomes an issue. Other than that, I think Draymond's fitting exactly where he needs to be. Beyond, I don't need him to score. I mean, there's too many other scorers on the squad already.
It might be different next year, you know, if and when Durant leaves.
No doubt.
Then you'll definitely need some
no
more
doubt.
Efficiency.
No doubt.
And they're going to have to add somebody at some point, obviously. But I don't really disagree. The one thing, I just throw it out there for conversation's sake, the one thing about Draymond that I think people kind of get lost in from the outside looking in is that they've got to understand, and you know this because you lived it, like the brotherly dynamics, like what we might, and I know it's not a problem, but what some might perceive to be like this real combustibility inside the Warriors locker room.
Yeah.
That's just the way they communicate, man. There's mutual respect. He's the alpha.
I think you're right.
And they roll their eyes at him on occasion.
Yep.
And they're like, that's Draymond being Draymond, but he's our guy. We love him.
You're right.
He's our boy.
As long as you're not saying anything publicly about me leaving, KD.
Exactly. Then I might have to chirp at you on the bench, and they captured that with the camera. But, like, they all know him. They all know he plays his behind off. And they all know that, you know, he's a bit of a roller coaster emotionally. But he's also, you know, he injects them with an edge that they need because KD's demeanor, relatively sedate.
Mm-hmm.
I know Steph Curry hops around when he's doing, you know, when he's doing well and he's doing the shimmies, but Klay Thompson, incredibly benign personality.
No,
you need a little jagged edge.
Agreed.
And he provides that.
I agree.
And they love it.
I think you're right.
All right. Coming up next, Teak, how about this? 6 days from the draft, and Teak and I will be out there. We'll be broadcasting Thursday and Friday from Nashville, Tennessee. 6 days from the NFL draft, and the Oakland Raiders war room is in complete and utter shambles. This is incredible. We'll get to that story coming up after Axe Update right now.
This is Teaky and Tierney on CBS Sports Radio.
Okay, Teaky and Tierney back on this busy Friday. CBS Sports Radio, CBS Sports Network, Sirius XM 206 around the country. As we get ready to blast into a holiday weekend, which is always terrific. Hey, Teak, it's time to ask the pros. Give you a chance to ask us anything you want. Brought to you by O'Reilly Auto Parts. Like, why is Teaky wearing a medium-sized shirt today to show off the guns a little bit?
You like that.
I don't, but I'm jealous, actually. just tweet us at CBS Sports Radio. Use the hashtag AskThePros at CBS Sports Radio. Hashtag AskThePros. And make sure you stick around and listen later on. Teak and I will answer the best one. Think O'Reilly Auto Parts, all your car care needs, guarantee low prices, excellent customer service at O'Reilly Auto parts, better prices every single day. We're gonna have to get into this a little later. Came down right after we started our show, mm-hmm. and I'm still trying to sort through this. But Tim Anderson, we did talk about this, the bat flip with Brad Keller, the Royals and the White Sox, the flare up, the bench is empty, nothing really wacky happened, which was good.
Mm-hmm.
But
it was a weak bench empty too.
Yeah, it was. But those are dangerous, man. I don't mind that being
but there was
weak.
There was no emotion. There was no emotion in the bench emptying. It was kind of like, yeah.
You know why I think?
I guess we should go out there. But yeah,
well, we have to. We have to jog in for the bullpen.
Yeah, they're jawing at each other.
Yeah.
You know what? He's yelling back at the pitcher.
But you know why? I'll tell you why.
Let's go.
I'll tell you why.
That's what it felt like.
It did feel like it looked like that, too. But I think that it felt like that because most of the players on the field understand. Most of them are younger.
Yeah.
So they understand Tim Anderson, even though it was a little bit over the top, and it's like it was a walk-off in the ninth inning. They understand bat flips and showmanship, and the other half were like, all right, we got to go support our guy in case it starts getting real. But he got suspended. Again, we will get to this. Get back to this. We're going to get to a guest here. But I guess the umpire heard him say, sure, I read this right. According to ESPN.com, umpires heard Anderson call Keller a weak bleep, bleeping N-word.
He's white.
And Keller's white. It's, and I know that that's obviously a couple of years ago in the NFL.
Yeah.
They started to put the clamps on that, regardless of race. But, you know, that's kind of an odd one there. We'll get to that a little bit later. What's also odd, although I don't think our next guest really thinks it is, Daniel Jeremiah, NFL Network analyst. Follow him on Twitter, at Move the Sticks. And, of course, the network providing live coverage of the entire draft from Nashville, April 25th through the 27th. And Teek and I will be out there as well. But I don't think Daniel believes necessarily what appears to be incredibly dysfunctional and sloppiness, or at least strangeness, emitting from the Raiders war room in terms of sending scouts home and bunkering down and just the head coach of the GM. Daniel says it's happened before with other teams, and Daniel's with us here on the show to talk about the draft and the Raiders. Daniel, what's up, buddy? How are you today?
What's going on, guys? How's it going?
Doing good.
Right. So you're okay with what John Gruden and Mike Mayock, your former colleague, are doing, sending all the scouts home? Get out of here. We don't want all the noise and distractions. We want to figure this out ourselves. That's normal.
Well, the funny thing is, look, that's the world I lived in for 8 years. All my best friends are in scouting all over the league.
Yeah.
And what people don't know is there are no scouting staff that are at the team facility right now. None. Mm-hmm. What they do is you go through your meetings. Those wrapped up this last Friday for almost every single team. Scouts have had their say, and then what happens now is they go home, and then the higher-ups, the general manager, maybe the head coach will be in there, your personnel director, maybe your college director. You put your final touches on the board. You figure out trade scenarios. You go through, kind of map out your plan. Most teams will have their scouts fly back out on a Tuesday or Wednesday this coming week. But for the most part, their contributions are done. They'll be outside the draft room for most teams, and then what would happen is you bring a scout into the room and might ask him a question about this guy's background. Are we okay with this, that, or the other if you have a question that pops up?
Yeah.
But for the most part, the scouts their process is kind of over right now. The only difference in this situation would be if they're not coming back at all.
Yeah.
Which sounds like that could be true. And
there you go.
Yeah.
If you're a new GM, you're gonna make all kinds of changes. So the odds are that there'll be a bunch of changes amongst that group.
Yeah. If this is so typical, Daniel, then why is it being made such a big deal? It's being reported as a big deal.
It's a good question.
Yeah. I mean, I think the way it's The latch onto, and look, Ian's a colleague, and he's reporting what he's heard, which is, it's. I think a lot of people find that interesting.
Yeah,
they've been sent home and aren't coming back. I'm just saying, from having been inside that world, it's not all that unusual.
Yeah,
it does happen.
Okay, what I quickly deduced when I saw the tweet, from Ian this morning, then others, and I know you've been on this as well on Twitter at Move the Sticks. Daniel Jeremiah is with us here on Tiki and Tierney. It just felt abrupt. It felt a little paranoid. Like, I'm sitting, and again, I might have read this entirely wrong, and I want to be fair to the Raiders organization, but my first sense was, well, maybe they're plotting to trade Derek Carr, and they don't want the word to get out, and they do have 3 first-round picks, and there could be a lot of trade possibilities, and they want to keep it really under wraps. It just struck me as subnormal in the drafting world, if you will. But I guess I'm wrong.
Well, look, 2 things. Number one, I hope you're right, because if someone who's going to be sitting there covering this thing, the more action, the better.
Yes.
Hopefully there is a bunch of action, explore your trades, and we'll have something to talk about on draft night. The other side of it is, I mean, there are no more paranoid people on planet Earth than football people. I mean, I can tell you on the NFL side, I can tell you about colleges. I remember going to Notre Dame at one point in time on a visit. This is way back when. I won't tell you who the coach was. But I got there, and they came in while I was watching tape and said, I don't know if you're going to be allowed to watch practice today. And I said, excuse me? They're like, well, you work for this team, and there's a coach on your staff that worked with the coach of a team that we're playing this week, and our coaches wouldn't feel comfortable with you out there. I'm like, guys, I'm going to watch stretches. I'm going to watch the first couple individual periods so I can get some body types, and then I'm going to leave. Like, I don't care if you run 9 flea flickers in practice. I don't care if you win or lose a game. I have no rooting interest in Notre Dame football. I'm just here to do my job.
Coach White,
that's how paranoid everybody is.
Yeah, Charlie White shouldn't have been that rough on you.
I didn't say it.
I don't think it was Ty or Bob Davies. All right, let me ask you this. I was telling Tico off the air, I was really bunkered in my office this morning getting ready for our Tops preview on Wednesday, the night before the draft, 3 hours live. And on the show, each one of us will have to make specific picks for certain teams. And, you know, one of the teams I was really diving into, and it's interesting because they could change the entire complexity of the draft here, is the Niners at number 2. We know about Armstead. We know about Buckner. We know about Solomon Thomas. We know about Garoppolo coming back from injury. They're not going to draft the quarterback, obviously. But the defensive ends, and they've taken 3 in the past 5 years. One is very good. One is still developing. One is disappointing. I mean, is there a chance they slide out? Do they go for Bosa? What do you really, right now, what's in your heart? What happens at number 2? Because that's going to set off a chain of events here.
Yeah, I know. You look at the depth that they have there, and I think some people kind of say, especially after bringing in D. Ford, do they go in a different direction or do they try and get out? I think they'd have to be blown away to get out of there. I know they like Quinnen Williams, but everything I heard from the very beginning was that was Nick Bosa. And you got a new defensive line coach in there in Chris Kocurek, and he was wanted by a lot of different people around the league. I think they're going to give him another toy to play with coming off the edge. I think what you end up having is you have Ford and Bosa coming off the edge. DeForest Buckner, who's a dominant player, can play inside next to one of those. And then I think you'll see Solomon Thomas. They'll limit his snaps and kind of roll him through. But I don't think they view him as kind of the long-term guy as a starter. So I wouldn't think that would preclude them taking what I believe is the best player in the draft.
Okay. All right. There you go. Good stuff. Daniel Jeremiah is with us here, NFL Network analyst. He's on Twitter, obviously, doing his thing. His Twitter handle is @MoveTheSticks. And, of course, the network, all live coverage, couple of days from Nashville, Tennessee. The draft is next week, the 25th through the 27th. We'll be there doing our thing on the radio. But Daniel's with us here on Tiki and Tiki.
All right, Daniel, quarterbacks sell, as we all know, and there's a couple teams that need them, including my former team, the New York Giants. Dave Gettleman's being, I don't know, dodgy and manipulative in
a
way.
He's a little weird.
As all GMs want to do. They have 2 picks, 6 and 17. A lot of people are speculating Dwayne Haskins at 6, maybe not. Maybe they're saying the Duke kid at 17, Daniel Jones. So what do you expect the Giants to do with their 2 drafts? Because obviously the replacement, I put that in quotes, for Eli has to be in the plan somewhere. What do you expect the Giants to do?
Well, you know, I've said for a little while now that if you're going to take a quarterback at 17, it makes no sense to me that you wouldn't just take him at 6. It's the most important position on the field. You're tying your job to the quarterback. Whether or not you take him with the 6th pick or the 17th pick, that guy's success or lack thereof is going to hold your future in his hand. So, personally, I'd rather have my first choice at 6 or my second choice rather than wait till 17 and just hope and wish and pray that somehow the guy I like is going to get there. Now, the only twist in the scenario is I could see them potentially, you know, taking a defensive player, whether that's a Rashawn Gary or a Montez Sweat or whoever, at 6. And then everything that I've heard over the last couple of days is both teams at 8 and 9 are looking to get out. So you have Detroit and Buffalo looking to trade back. And that could be a scenario where, okay, you know, you come back up into 8 or 9, and then you take the quarterback there. I do believe they're going to take a quarterback. He'll be selected before the 10th pick. I just can't see them sitting back and waiting for 17 to see what the fate hands them.
Yeah, they're also in the speculative realm with Josh Rosen as far as trading with the Arizona Cardinals. 1, do you buy that? And 2, if not, what happens with Josh? Because we can't see him being on the Arizona Cardinals to start the season in 2019.
No, I can't. I can't see him being there. I just, you know, I look at the landscape of the quarterback position, and, you know, first of all, I like Josh coming to the draft last year. I know he didn't play well with a very bad football team. But when you look at it, and you look at the price, and look, Russell Wilson is a great quarterback, top 5 quarterback, no doubt. He's making $35 million a year. Now, he's better than Josh Rosen. He's a lot better than Josh Rosen. Is he $32 million better? Because he cost $3 million. I think it's $6.2 million over the next 3 years. Josh Rosen's basically free, which would give you the luxury to add a lot of other pieces on your football team when you're paying your quarterback so little. So I see value there. I see value if I was the Giants. I would see value there if I were the Redskins. That's still my guess. He ends up one of those two places with maybe the Chargers as a wild card.
Oh, they got those sweet baby powder blue jerseys back, yeah, too. Gotta love those. I love those things. All right, Daniel, let me ask you this. We talk about Bosa, talk about Williams, talk about Josh Allen. For a while, and I remember doing this in, I probably was like October, on Tops, and I remember talking about Ed Oliver a lot from Houston, where I thought there was a chance he, and at that point, most people agreed, top five talent. And then, you know, kind of dropped a little bit, had an issue with the coach, with the, I think something with the jacket, and it just didn't end well for him. It wasn't a great look. He's a three-technique guy. He is unconventional in his technique, and I think that's turned some people off. But what is his draft ceiling? How high can he go? And what is his draft floor? Because he's the guy to me who seems a whole myriad responses and thoughts on what he can be and where he might go.
Yeah, I think when it's all said and done, it might be surprising where he ends up going. I think three to the Jets, he's very much in play there.
Wow.
I think four to the Oakland Raiders, he's very much in play there. So that would be kind of the high end for him. I don't think he would get by Buffalo at nine.
Mm-hmm.
I think he'll end up being he'll be a top 10 pick when it's all said and done. Now, you know, you look, the jacket thing, nobody cares about
No,
that.
I hear you.
Nobody
I hear you.
NFL. Yeah, nobody in the NFL cares about that.
Yeah.
The lack of production, I don't know. Maybe I have to go back through and look through some notes, but I find it hard to believe I could look and see a player that was more misused than a scheme than Ed Oliver was at Houston this last year. You got a guy who played. Now, he ended up bulking up and added some artificial weight to get to like 287 at the combine, but he played at 274, 275. They lined him up in a zero technique. They played him head up over the center and basically just said, hey, center and both guards, let's have at it. You guys go get him.
Yeah.
No sense to me whatsoever how they used him.
Yeah.
Okay.
I agree.
Okay.
They're trying to make him into some of these smaller D tackles that we see dominate on the NFL level. You know, quarterbacks, again, I'll go back to them because they sell, and we have a few of them in this draft. Kyler Murray, a lot of people expect to go number one. That will depend on what Arizona wants to do, which is kind of a side question. Do you have any indication of what Arizona is going to do?
I texted their general manager, Steve Keim, after his press conference the other day, and said, congratulations, that was a masterful performance of filling up 30 minutes with absolutely nothing.
That's a skill.
Nothing. It was a lot of words that accomplished nothing, which is the goal of every general manager at pre-draft press conferences. I tweeted it out to you. It's like my guilty pleasure watching these things. It's like funny. Watching The Matrix. It's like watching Neo just dodge one question after another, and not say a single thing. But, no, I still think it ends up being Kyler Murray. But look, we don't know until they make the final call there.
Yeah.
So as somebody who's going to be up there on the desk, gosh, I hope they wait till draft night to find out together.
Yeah. Make it interesting. Dwayne Haskins, Drew Locke, Daniel Jones. There's a few other ones that we talked about. Will Greer. Are any of them scary to you?
A lot of them are scary. I mean, this is compared to last year, where I felt really good about a lot of those guys. You've got the top two quarterbacks, in my opinion, with Murray and Haskins, are one-year guys. You look at Daniel Jones, who hadn't played with much talent, but on the numbers, they're not going to blow you away there. Drew Locke's been inconsistent. You can poke holes in all of these quarterbacks. That's why, when you look back 5 years from now, it might be one of these second-tier players that somebody takes a flyer on in the third round. You know, it could be a Jared Stidham or a Ryan Finley.
Yeah.
That end up emerging as one of the better quarterbacks in this draft class because there's a lot of uncertainty.
Yeah, no, I think you're right. Now, last question we got to ask. You only got about 30 seconds here, Daniel, but it's important that you answer this question. After your colleague, Mike Mayock, now becomes a general manager, and you guys know more than anybody. Is that a career goal for guys like you to become a general manager, to be in a front office? Is that something you would want to do?
I spent my 8 years in the personnel department. I've had other opportunities to go back in, but I've got young kids. I want to get them through high school, and trust me, this TV thing's not that bad.
No, it's not. It's not. But the energy of being in a front office, as you know, it's amazing. It's nothing like
it. If you're in the right one.
Yes. Good point.
If you're in the right one. Daniel, great.
That's the whole key right there.
That's a very good point.
It is elusive for most. Daniel, great job. We'll be seeing you down in Nashville at Move the Sticks. Daniel Jeremiah from the NFL Network. Good job, buddy. Appreciate it.
Thanks, guys. Have a good one.
Be good, okay, Daniel.
You too.
He also has a podcast called Move the Sticks with Bucky Brooks, who was also really
That's
good.
Right. Brooks is good, no doubt. All right, coming up here, the NFL, they never say this. The NFL actually says, my bad. Wow. Better record that. Better capture that one on audio video. They said, my bad. Plus, former players as GMs. Is it smart? Inbounds, out of bounds. Coming up next, Tiki and Tierney, CBS Sports Radio, CBS Sports Network, SiriusXM 206. Come on back in a sec.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.